Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there, if you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Hello, bastards and wenches, and welcome to the final edition of our Anime Boston 2018 podcast interview specials. We're finally done! We can go back to our bi-weekly No Borders, No Race podcast next week, which I promise has a bunch of great artists already lined up for that episode. Now, before we fully wrap up, I want to give one more special thanks to the Anime Boston staff and crew for their hard work, dedication, and especially their patience as I worked on all its coverage. Every year, they do a great job with making sure things are going properly over at the Hines, as well as keeping the guests and the congoers happy. So please, give those guys all your love and respect as they did a phenomenal job this year with the event. So, on this final press interview, you'll be hearing from voice actress Stephanie Shea. You'll know her as the voice of the iconic Sailor Moon, Yui from K-On!, Mitsuha in the critically acclaimed film Your Name, Mikuru from the Haruhi Suzumiya franchise, and Mamimi in Fooly Cooly, just to name a few. She's also worked behind the scenes on such films as A Silent Voice, Welcome to the Space Show, Batman Ninja, as well as the Gundam franchise and the French series Last Man. B3 was joined by Wicked Anime, Worcester State University TV, Anime Herald, Nerd Caliber, Convention Scene, Game Press, and the University of Connecticut for this very informative interview. So Call Me By Your Name, I know that's a totally different film, but it kind of fits, as we ride into this final Anime Boston podcast interview special with Stephanie Shea.
They get another question, though, right? Like that.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay. Because I would feel bad if that, like, that was their question. I'm like, pass.
All the way in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool.
Hi. My name is Ashley Anthony, and that's my partner, Nick.
Hi.
And we're with the WSU Center for Community Media from Worcester.
Okay. Cool.
And my first question is, you've played anime characters that become role models to many audiences, especially young girls and women over the years. That wide range includes the larger-than-life heroine, Sailor Moon, the misunderstood Mama Mimi, and the timid Hinata. And when you play these roles, do you feel pressure to get the characters right due to the huge impact they could have on someone?
I feel pressure to get the characters right regardless of the impact, even if it was like a villain that is a bad role model, just because I started out as a fan, and so I know that these characters mean a lot to people and to the creators and even to the original voices, and you just want to do them justice. I will say, in terms of being a role model, now, especially after doing Sailor Moon, I'm just a little bit a little bit more cognizant of, like, how I conduct myself outside of, you know, just in, like, the everyday world. I have a little bit of influence, not a huge amount of influence. It's still anime, it's still voiceover. But, you know, any influence that any of us have, why not try to do good? You know, that's like my philosophy. So, awesome. Thanks. Which one are you going?
Seth Byrne, Anime Herald.
Hi.
Can you talk about the process for casting Batman Ninja for the American audiences?
It's interesting because Batman Ninja, it's obviously Batman is a property that Warner Brothers and DC are very passionate about, and they want to have a good kind of quality control. For a lot of the characters, I had to get kind of approval of voices to you know, by Warner Brothers. And a lot of the actors, some of them had played certain roles before. Without giving too much away, I wish I remembered the dates. Gary's gonna kill me. I think the digital version is like April 24th and May 8th or something is the Blu-ray. But a lot of characters are in it. And so we had to kind of like double up on some roles and stuff, and certain people had to be approved. So that was kind of tricky process. And then the one that I'm super, super excited about is Tony Hale as the Joker, because he is amazing. And he is such a sweet guy in real life. And he's so, like, you know, it's just so normal. We were just at WonderCon, and he was very, I have a cough because I got sick like 3 weeks ago and I'm still coughing. And then he's like, we're walking from autograph to a panel or panel to autograph, and he just came up to me. He's like, "So are you taking your vitamins? Are you da da da?" You know, and he's just such a down to earth, sweet, normal guy. And then to see him be the Joker is amazing. So it's cool. And you know, I've worked with and Michael have worked with people like Yuri and Roger on anime type stuff. So we definitely knew that the ADR syncing would not be a problem for them at all. But then all the regulars like Tara and Gray and, you know, Fred, they were awesome. I mean, Fred was in Letter to Momo with us, so, but they were no problem. They're all pros. They're all super, super good. It was super, like, easy. I don't even know what to say. I wish I could give you like a better story on how difficult it was, but it wasn't really. It was super easy, yeah.
Right, I'm Lena Kelly with Nerd Caliber. I'd like to talk about your role as Usagi in Sailor Moon.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever feel like you related to the character over time, or initially, or compared to now?
I don't think I personally relate to Usagi other than her love of food. That's the only thing. Because I'm not... Well, I'm a little klutzy. I used to sprain my ankle all the time. I have weak ankles. But I actually think Usagi's not that klutzy, because, like, she, like, falls over, and then it's, like, she ends up dodging, like, exactly where she needs to dodge and tumble and stuff. And I also was a very good student, and studied a lot, so that's unlike Usagi. I'm not with my, like, high school boyfriend, you know, like, destined to forever to be a couple, like, kind of stuff. So I'm not that similar, although I think some of the rest of the actresses feels like I'm very maternal, you know, that I corral them when we're out, I make sure everyone's okay, and they're like, yeah, it just makes sense, because there is that a little bit of that motherly instinct, you know.
Hi, my name is Colin Zolan with ConnectedScene.com.
Mm-hmm.
What do you find are the challenges of adapting a Japanese anime versus creating a new character whole cloth in a Western animation?
I think it's interesting. when you say adapting, do you mean like the production, like writing scripts and that, or do you just mean like as an actor, creating a character that...
I was just thinking as an actor, but I didn't realize...
As an actor, I think that the dubbing process, you don't get... A lot of it is a cold read. Like, you don't get the script beforehand. The first time you see it is when you walk into the booth, and the second before when they preview the line. And back when I started, the releases were much further apart. Like, it would be released in Japanese, and then it'd be, like, 2 years, and I'd get picked up, right? So, like, usually you could find a version, and you could, like, watch the series to prep. But nowadays, it's so quick that it's really hard to do that. And also because, like, piracy affects the industry so much that I really don't choose to do that. You know, I don't want to, like, support any traffic to some foreign site that is making ad money off of pirating. So I don't do that. But so a lot of it is that you don't have freedom because you're matched. You're restricted not only by like the mouth flap, but you're also restricted by the face animation, right? So if you had a moment where you're like, "Oh, I feel like my character would say this aside or a little snarky," but like they're smiling, then you're like, "Okay, then you have to perform it in a way that is like dictated to you either by the number of mouth flaps. Like if you want to take a little bit longer, you can't because you have to squeeze it in, or you have to stretch it out, and sometimes your performance really depends on that. You know, certain types of reads go faster and other types of reads go slower. Like if someone said, "Oh, like more excited," then you tend to say the line faster. But if you have to say the line slow for mouth flap, there's only so much excitement you can, you know, convey, and it kind of, like, limits. So it limits your performance in that way, and then also the face. So that's, like, the hardest thing to do. When it's original animation, you're, like, so free to play. And then if you're blessed to have a group record, it's even more fun because you're playing off of people. Somebody, you're reacting to the other person. It gets you an idea in the moment, and you can play with it. And then also, like, you can kind of improv lines sometimes, you know, because the writers are usually in the room, and they'll be like, yeah, that's good, or like, no, stick to the script, you know. But at least you have that freedom, so it's the lack of freedom so.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Max from Gay Press.
Okay.
So, would you care to elaborate more on your work on Fire Emblem and Nintendo in general?
Okay, so I know I do, like, several voices for Fire Emblem, but the one that I care about the most and is most fun to do is Tharja, or Rajat, or I guess, wait, what's her other name? Celia or whatever, but really Tharja or Rajat. It's just so much fun. I don't usually get to voice like the deeper, more evilly type characters. I'm usually like sweet, innocent, or klutzy. I don't know. But Amanda Miller is always all weekend like, "Why don't you just tell your agent to like, so you got auditions for like the deeper girls? You would, like, I really thought, because I like your deeper voice better." Like, she's like very, I was like, "No, I mean, I do. Like, I do Tharja from Fire Emblem." But it's so much fun. I just have so much fun, and like the recent games where it's like this other level of like she's trying to be normal but clearly she's not, that just was so much even more fun to play. It's seriously one of my favorite roles for video games ever. And then she's so hot. Hats off to anyone who ever tries to cosplay her. And there's been quite a few very successful Tharja cosplays, but I'm just like, bravo.
Hi, I'm from the University of Connecticut. My name's Anna, and this is Megan.
Hey.
Also, we're sent from college. We have a pretty big anime club.
Yay!
And if I read right in college, that's how you got your start. Could you elaborate a little bit about your time there?
So I went to UCLA, and so the way it started was I was writing for The Bruin, which was the UCLA school newspaper, and my editor said, "Oh, this anime thing is like kind of getting big, or just do an article about the anime club." And I didn't really know, I wasn't really into anime, except actually I was as a child, but I didn't realize that because I was like way big into Robotech and Voltron, like when I was much younger, but I didn't really like equate it as being anime or whatever. So they're like, "Okay, just..." And so I searched for the anime club, and I couldn't find them. I went to the student body offices where they have all the club registry, and then they gave me the numbers of the officers, but I guess they all graduated, and it was the beginning of the year, so the new officers hadn't come in and submitted their info. So I can't find this anime club. And then I was walking Bruin Walk one day, I think it was a Wednesday, and they had this big sandwich board out, and it's anime club meeting tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. Sorry. And I was my article was due a Friday or something like that. And I had a midterm the next day. I was like, oh man, crap, I gotta go to this thing. And I have a midterm the next day. And I was like, what are they gonna do for 3 hours? 3 hours is so long. What? That's the longest club meeting ever. So I showed up, and then I spoke to the president, and I said I was from the paper, and then if he couldn't make an announcement and let people know, maybe I could interview some people. And so then he gets up and he goes like, hey everybody, today we're watching Evangelion, Escaflowne, Slayers, and Marmalade Boy. Oh yeah, and there's somebody from the newspaper, so if anyone wants to be interviewed, just stick around. And then the lights dimmed, and then they just started playing anime. And it was the very first episode of Evangelion, which ends in a massive cliffhanger, right? There's a second episode of Escaflowne, which also ends in a massive cliffhanger. You think everybody's gonna die. And then it was a Slayers episode that was in the middle, but also was in a cliffhanger. And then it was in the middle of Marmalade Boy, but it was one of the episodes with her and, is it Kay, the piano playing guy? And so you're just you never know. That one's everything is who's she gonna end up with? Oh my God, da da da. So after it was over, I was like, crap, I'm gonna have to come back next week. So then I interviewed some people, and then one of my good friends, still to this day, Ardith, and she later became my roommate, she was a secretary at the anime club, and I interviewed her, and we bonded over how we all had crushes on Rick Hunter when we were children. Except for she found Minmay annoying, and I actually really liked Minmay. I wanted to be Minmay, but then as an adult, I went back and I rewatched it. And I was like, no, Minmay is annoying. But I strategically set out to befriend her, because I was like, this girl seems to have a lot of anime. So I strategically set out to befriend her so I could borrow all of her tapes and all her DVDs. Well, no, back then there was no DVDs. I'm so old. So it was all these tapes and fan subs and stuff. And so then we actually became real good friends. So that was my gateway of how I got started. And then the next year, she ran, and I think she became president, and then I was one of the librarians or secretary. Do they still do that gloves now?
Yeah, they have a secretary.
But you guys probably have do you guys have legit DVDs, or are you still dealing in fan subs, or half and half?
It's kind of half and half.
Okay. Because back when we were doing it, it was there was very little anime, licensed anime out there at all. So it was all fan subs. And those poor secretaries would this stack in their backpack, and they're they'd have to lug it every week. Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Andrew Fleming from Wicked Anime.
Okay.
My brother and I, that's Jonathan Fleming.
Hi.
We run a podcast show on Japanese culture and animation,
uh-huh,
and all that. And I would like to know, what was the worst job you have ever had before entering the anime industry?
Oh. I mean, the anime industry has been, pretty good. I can tell you, a worse voiceover job, because I don't feel like I've really had I've had, difficult things happened. I got fired from one job, and that was traumatic. But that was my fault, and it was a good learning lesson. So sometimes bad shit happens, but it's good for you. But I've not it's never actually been, a terrible job. For the most part, it's been, really, it's a good community. But I answered a Craigslist Craigslist ad. That was my first mistake one time for a voiceover audition for a video game. And then it turned out to be an adult-oriented game. It was at somebody's house. It was at somebody's house, and the audition was like in a cupboard, like in the kitchen. Like there was like a curtain, and then if I like peeled back the curtain, there was like cans of tomato sauce and corn and stuff like that. And then there was a microphone in there with no stand for the paper. And then because the cable was like going under the door, like the door wouldn't fully shut. And then, like, the guys recording it were, like, all the way in the bedroom. So this, like, cable went all the way through the house. And so then I was like, I mean, and I drove, like, 45 minutes to get to this audition. It was, like, way up in the valley. And so I'm there, and I'm, like, reading, and it's, like, 7 pages. And it's, like, all these different characters. And at some point, I was, like, really getting frustrated, and I was like, okay. Hey, you guys, I mean, don't you have enough stuff? Like, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of, like, for the audition stuff. And then they were like, oh, they were actually really sweet. They were like, oh, actually, we're actually just having everybody record all the parts. And then we'll just use the ones that we like. And I'm like, huh? And by then I was like, there was only 2 pages left. So I was like, I'll just finish it. But I was, like, really not happy, right? And I was like, what is this? This is so weird. And, like, luckily, like, there was, like, it wasn't, like, really pornographic. It was just, like, kind of, like, sexy, like, hey, come here type of things. It wasn't, like, you know, like, sex noises and that kind of stuff. So it was kind of like a Leisure Suit Larry type of game where the guy, like, tries to, like, make it with different girls and he, like, goes on. Like, I don't really know. I didn't play it. I think Ron Jeremy ended up being in the game playing himself. But anyways, so I was like, I did the thing and like signed my paperwork and I just like ran out of there. I left. And then months and months and months and months later, I get a check in the mail for like $40, right? And I'm like, what is this check for? What? Oh, what is this? And I was like, who's sending me 40? I don't recognize the production company. I don't recognize it. And then I'd seen, like, the notes. It's, like, I don't remember the name of the game. It's, like, Big Booty something something, right? And then I was like, oh, it was that game that I did in that kitchen cupboard. And then I saw, like, clips of it online and YouTube. And then the role that they picked for me was, like, me doing, like, an Indian accent. Like, it was so random. It was so random. Yeah. Anyways.
Hi there, my name is Evan Borgo. I'm from the Boston Bass Brigade. It's great to see you again. And this is my friend Eric Smith, also from Boston Bass Brigade. So, one of the shows you recently did, which still sticks out as one of the best dramas I've seen both in and out of anime, is Erased. And I would like to know how you went about with your portrayal of Kaio Hinazuki, who goes through so many moods and so many experiences, some of which are probably like the most horrible things a kid could ever like have to face.
Yeah, I think a lot of that I owe to Alex Von David, the director. He was really good at guiding me because he had seen the whole thing. He also refused to tell me what happened. Like I'd be like, you know, it's such a mystery. I'd be like, so wait, is that the killer? And he'd be like, you just have to wait. I was like, do I die now? Like, it was, like, very, but I think he was, and it was tough because it was a very kind of, you know, natural feeling tonally for the anime. So, but I really just relied on him to kind of guide me through what was going on and in terms of that portrayal, you know. I think that while Kaio was going through a lot, she kept a lot of stuff in. So it's a little bit easier to portray that, I guess, than to try to sound realistically like a child and have like a freak out, because children don't freak out the same as adults, you know? So, cool. Did we get one round in?
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo!
What was it like having the opportunity to work on Your Name, which was already such a huge success in Japan?
That was like, I'm so grateful to have worked on that. So it's like a dream come true. Yeah. We didn't really know much about the film. I know that they premiered the Japanese version in Anime Expo, and like a lot of people lined up and waited a very long time to see it. But I didn't know anything about it. And so I always try to, I try to tell people to watch it, but then I try to tell people nothing about it, which is kind of a hard sell. But primarily because my experience watching the movie was that I knew nothing about it. And we watched it because we, as a studio, were going to dub it. And then Michael and I watched it, and we brought over a friend of mine who lived in Japan teaching English, and I actually met her at a convention. So she speaks Japanese, and so we were watching it, and yeah, there's so many things that happen, and I don't want to give it away if no one's seen it, but after I was crying, I was laughing, like all, and I think not just in anime, but in anything, like I hadn't felt that way watching something in a really long time. I think the world has become a lot more cynical, and so the emotional experience for me watching that movie was it brought back to me like the idea of hope, and also the idea that things that are supposed to work out can work out, you know? Which I think that as a society and as a country, like, we just don't really believe anymore. And I don't blame us. Look at the world around us. You know, it's hard to believe in that stuff. But I think our art and our stories and our writers kind of reflect that right now. So it was just nice to be back in this, like, headspace to be, like, have those like, the feels. Yeah, so it was amazing. And then I know I wanted to be a part of it so badly, but also as from production and producer end, like, it wasn't, I'm not going to, like, put myself in something that I didn't think I was right for. And to be honest, I didn't think I was right for the part. And Michael didn't think he was right for it either. We actually auditioned last. We auditioned a bunch of other actors. And then after reviewing them, it was just didn't feel like we could find, you know, the right person. A lot of the actresses were good at portraying maybe Mitsuha, but not Taki, you know, in Mitsuha's body, or they couldn't do like a light accent of something. So then eventually Clark, who wrote the ADR script, and Michael were like, well, why don't you read for it? And then I kind of went into, because I was born in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I used to live in Maynard, Massachusetts. So like as a kid, I sounded different than I do now. So I kind of like tapped into like the more of a Midwest, I still say like sandwich, you know, like, and like certain things that I don't pronounce exactly right. But, so I kind of like delved into that. And so then we had like, and they liked it. And so, yeah, I was like, yay.
You played a lot of roles over your career, both in terms of video games, movies, and now you play a lot of roles. You write, you direct, voice act. Where do you want to see your career go over the next 6 months to 5 years?
Oh, it's a good question. My first love is acting. I would love to do more on-camera work. I would also love to do more original animation. So those are kind of like my dreams. I'm starting, like in the last few years, I've been doing more original animation. I was in Korra. I have a small part in Stretch Armstrong, obviously like Katana, DC Girls, and I appear on We Bare Bears a lot, but I feel like I've been doing like supporting smaller roles, and utility players for original animation. It'd be nice to have like a lead breakout role, it'd be a lot of fun. And I really want to do more on camera. The on camera thing is a tricky thing because that world is so visually based, and I am very visually specific, for lack of a better way to describe it. I'm not necessarily like a type. You know, I'm no spring chicken anymore. And metabolism has caught up with me. So that's very difficult as a female in Hollywood. And because they either want you to be very big or very, very thin. And also very young. And I'm just really short. So now that as I'm older, you know, the roles are like moms or judges or doctors or whatever. And I'm just still like super petite and short that like people just don't like buy it, you know. But I think it just means maybe I have to make my own stuff or just not be frustrated. I saw some quote recently from Frances McDormand, and she was saying that, you know, when she was starting out as a younger actress, people said to her, you're not a type. And then she said, well, I'm going to, like, be the type. Like, she's, like, instead of her fitting into other, like, roles, you know, these types, archetypes, she was going to become her own archetype. That's not the exact quote, but it's something like that. And that was very inspirational to me. So, yeah. So I'm like, that would be awesome. Those are kind of like where I would love to be. And I'm very, very lucky. I've got to do a lot of things. I got to mocap for Maz Kanata in Battlefront 2. So it's great. Greg Griffin's doing the voice, but I'm doing the body. And then I didn't know how it turned out, and then I went on YouTube and I watched a cutscene. And I was like, oh yeah, I totally buy it. I buy it. And I was like very conscious of like how I was walking, and I watched the behind the scenes footage for Force Awakens to see how Lupita did it. And then I realized that Lupita was actually on her knees, which is why Maz was like shuffling a lot. Except for I'm much taller, so I wasn't on my knees. So then I, you know, incorporate different things and where our arms were and our elbows were connected. And so, yeah. All right, I'm rambling. Did I answer your question?
what's your advice to kids or even adults who wish to pursue voice acting or just entertainment in general?
Okay, it's really, really tough because I think it's a really, really tough industry. You have to, like, ask yourself why you're doing it. It's a lot of work, and the thing that I love about it, I love the craft. I love the acting itself, you know? I still take classes, and I feel like my peers who are really into it also take classes. I feel the other thing that appeals to me about the arts is that it's not, you can always get better. Because it's a process, and you as a human being is always changing. So there's always things that you can tap into, and the more layers, the better. And so I feel like if that is not how you feel about acting, maybe it's not for you. Because you have to be satisfied creatively on a level that is separate from just the fame or the money. I think that a lot of fans of anime don't realize that anime itself doesn't pay a lot. If you're looking at it, like, comparing, like, an hourly wage, sure, that seems like a lot. But you're not doing 9 to 6 of voiceovering. Also, physically, your body, your voice couldn't really do that, you know? So, it's just something to be aware of. And as a freelancer, you don't, you know, you have to figure out your own pension and health and buy your own health insurance and all sorts of other things, adulting, you know, that makes it more complicated. So you have to, in terms of like pursuing entertainment or being an actor, you have to be prepared to handle that part of your career because that's part of your career too. There's the business element of it. Some actors hate self-promotion, but that's also kind of part of you're basically a one-person business. You're the marketing department, you know, you're the content department, you're the finance, you're everything. I think that's what I'd like to impart, you know, because I think there's so many things that you can be inspired by and do in the world. And if you don't have like a greater connection to the art, it's harder to keep going when times get tough. You know?
Thank you.
Thanks.
As over the past like 15, 20 years, as fan culture, convention culture, anime culture has kind of blown up. What's your perspective of it now, and how has it changed over the course of your
life? Oh, yeah. Okay, so when I first started doing conventions, nobody got paid. They paid for the actor. They paid for your hotel and your airfare. You didn't even get a per diem. Sometimes they fed you. And then I remember back in the day, Anime Expo, like, didn't consider Americans guests. Like, only Japanese people could be guests of honor. So it was a very, very different, you know, feel. And I think also, like, there was more, cons were a little bit more resistant to having dub actors be guests and be on panels. And I think they just saw, like, oh, there's a draw for it. And so that's really different. Now we get paid. And I think the other thing that's been a shift, so that was the first huge shift. Now the second shift is the autographs and charging for autographs. Because that is, and that's kind of, I don't know that it's controversial or anything, but maybe it is, maybe it isn't. You go to a media con or a, what's the word for it? You know, like a comic con, stuff like that. And those actors, they get paid and they charge for autographs, or they do like a guarantee. Like if they have to sell X number, whatever their payment is guaranteed for X number of signatures, you know. But they're charging like $20, $30, sometimes $40 a signature. The photos are like $70 or $80. A lot of voice actors are charging more. I feel very torn because I feel that there's so much pirating. Like, I feel like a lot of anime fans don't have that much money. And I don't want to contribute to something that takes away from their limited cash flow. If they have money, I'd rather them go and buy a DVD than buy a signature from me, right? Because if the industry collapses, I'm shooting myself in the foot, right? But at the same time, I really understand where the actors are coming from, right? Most of it's non-union. And even the union stuff, there really aren't any residuals for it. So you do a show, and let's say the show blows up and is super popular, airing on TV, airing blah, blah, blah. You're making a lot of money, helping the company, the distributor, make a lot of money, but we just get paid for our hours, so it's a buyout. So we just get paid once. And no matter how popular it is or how not popular it is, it's all the same, you know? And we're here at conventions, and anytime we sell something, that's helping to promote the show, right? But we're not getting any residuals or anything back end. So on one hand, I also understand why actors want to charge for their autograph. Because in a way, they're working for the show and they're helping promote the show. And they're not getting residuals and, you know, like, turnover rate. Oh, there's always like new, fresh blood coming in. And you only sound so young for an X amount of time. So I think it's really tricky. I do see a shift, though. I still sign for free, or at least I sign like the first three for free, or you know. But I'm finding that as my peers are charging more, or more of my peers are charging, actually, because they still don't charge that much, you know. Like it's like $10 or $20 usually in comparison to like a TV actor. But as I find that more of my peers are charging, more of the fans are like really willing to just pay me. Like, a lot of them seem surprised when I'm like, oh no, it's free, you know? So, I think that's how, like, kind of cons are changing a little bit. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Alright, so for our Fate Grand Order fans, kind of, what was the story behind voicing Ilya's Girl von Einsprung? You know, she's kind of a different character from Starjo.
She's like an evil little girl. It's interesting. I think Fate is very confusing for me because we've done it so many times, and now I'm like, wait, is this a sequel to that version or that version? And then also, like, the first version, she was like, Fate Stay Night was the first one, right? And she was like evil little girl, but like not super evil, because like after Berserker was defeated, like she like still like hung around the house, like she didn't like die and disappear like all the other ones. She's like, oh no, she's still around. And then then what was the other series that we did where it was like super dark? And then there was the other one where it was like my dad, there was like with my parents, like it's confusing to me, but for the most part I rely on the directors to be like, no, this is that one. And then they are very good at having vocal references. So they'll play a vocal reference and they'll be like, wait, no, that's from the wrong series. And then they'll play a different one and they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. And the producer, Hiraway from Aniplex, she's very good at keeping stuff straight. So she's like always like, no, this is that.
Well. As an anime voice actress and being in the industry, what is your own personal favorite anime? Not necessarily one that you've been in.
Oh, okay. It's really hard to pick. Well, for movies, I'm like so bad at favorites. Can I like name a few? I really love the original Furikuri. I also really love Kodomo no Omocha. I've only seen the Japanese version of that. There's a great show that's called Akachan to Boku. It's never come out in the United States. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's about a little boy. It's like heavy drama. It's basically about a little kid who has to raise his baby brother because his mom was hit by a car pushing his baby brother's stroller out of the way. And his dad now has to support two kids, so he's like always working. And so it's like he has to take care of his, and then the beginning, like he really hates his, you know, because he blames his brother for his mom's death. So it's like super drop, but it's such a good show. I also like Maho Jin Guruguru, which I don't think has ever come out yet. Has it come?
It has. A Magical Circle Girl Guru came out
last. It has?
Yeah.
I did not know that. So I watched it a long time ago, like subtitle. Who released it? Do you know?
Crunchyroll, but it was a remake that they did.
Oh, the new version. Okay, I never see the new version. But it's still like Kukuri and Yusha and Meke Meke. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's like a spoof of like RPGs. It's so funny if you play RPGs. So I like those shows. What other shows that I like really into? I loved your name is like one top films for me. Also, like we recently worked on Lou Over the Wall, which comes out in May, and it's just super charming. I love that movie, and I saw Night is Short, Walk On Girl. Or is it Night is Long? Well, Night is Long. Night is Long, Walk On Girl, right? Or is Night is Short? Shoot, I don't know which one it is. But it's a Yuasa film that is like totally out there. Which was also amazing. I love that. See, I can't just pick one.
So, which of these two films would you say was the most emotional one to work on? Your Name or A Silent Voice?
It's, you know what? Probably, they were difficult for different reasons, but probably A Silent Voice was harder because I was committed to finding a deaf actress. It was also really rewarding, though. And the subject matter just was like, would make me cry. And I learned so much about the deaf community. Also, we had called back like five actresses, and all five actresses said at their callbacks that, because you know, I gave them some scenes and I forwarded them the trailer without having them seen the whole movie, and they actually said that they felt like that was like their childhood. And when I had seen A Silent Voice, I thought that it was a little melodramatic. I thought it was like a heightened storyline. The level of bullying and abuse was like too, it's fiction, right? You know. But then to hear like all five deaf actresses tell me that that's what they went through as a kid was really eye-opening. There was also another actress that was recommended to me who was an actual teenager and who was a huge anime fan. And she was an actress. And she was oral. So oral just means that they speak, because not all deaf people choose to speak. And then she didn't audition, and I asked the woman who was helping me cast why, and then she told me that, well, it was the anniversary of her brother's death, and her mom didn't think it was good for her to audition after she got the sides and stuff, especially because her brother killed himself because he was basically from bullying, and he was also deaf. So, you know, that's like really heavy stuff to hear, and then kind of just reminds you like how important the movie is, because I think that the deaf community can sometimes be forgotten, and I mean, I would say myself included, I didn't really know much about the deaf community. I didn't think about them. I don't have that interaction, but now having worked on the film, I'm just a lot more sensitive to that, you know. Amanda C. Miller, who does Sailor Jupiter, she has a web series out called Ghosts and Stuff that she wrote and produced, and she's in it. And one of the things that she brought up is that, you know, like with all the stuff on YouTube and people doing their web series and their video, their vlogs and whatnot, a lot of the content creators don't bother to close caption their stuff. Because they just don't think to, or they don't think it's necessary. And there are so many people in the deaf community that don't have the opportunity to enjoy and partake in things because they're just being left out because people don't consider them, you know? So, it's interesting. I met another girl who worked at a chocolate shop, and she was explaining too how, like, you know, her father's deaf, and how there are times when, like, he's out in public and maybe he, like, not, like, accidentally bumps into somebody, right? But he's not going to say, I'm sorry, because it's more of an inconvenience. Or if someone tries to, because he can't, you know, he would only sign, he doesn't speak, he's not oral, so it's like a whole other thing, and then people just end up, like, yelling at him. And just making assumptions and getting angry, and it just like makes you kind of think about like what you take for granted and what you assume about other people that you may actually not know or be wrong about. So.
Questions about all